Let's say your net income is $100,000. You're going to be subject to an ordinary income tax of whatever tax bracket it falls in. Let's say at 22% tax bracket, you're going to be subject to self-employment tax, 15.3%. Close to 40% of that $100,000 is going to be a federal tax you're paying.
You're listening to 5-Hour Real Estate Week, where you'll learn to consistently buy real estate in only 5 hours a week. So if you're ready to invest in real estate, achieve financial freedom, and own the lifestyle you deserve, even with your job, this is the show for you. Now, here's your host, Mike Butler.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the 5-Hour Real Estate Week podcast. I'm Mike Butler. I'm your host, and today's topic is part 5 of a 6-part series we're doing on tax updates for today's real estate investor like you. And our special guest is the super sharp, genius, intelligent guy I learned so much from over the last year and even during this training episodes that we're doing here. But he's your real estate investor tax guy. And we're going to, today's topic is tax explanations of LLCs, partnerships, and S-corps. Wow, we need to sort that out. And so, I've got a cheat sheet going there that I've got too much showing. So, we like to have fun doing this too. And real estate should be fun. Your business should be fun. So welcome aboard, Eric. And I'll let you take off here with episode 5, or this is part 5 of your 6-part series. And get started. Go ahead.
Well, thanks for having me, Mike. Today's part of the series is tax explanations of your entities. So when I'm working with clients, I get questions a lot on what is an LLC or how am I taxed or just different types of situations that I have to explain. And in some cases, sometimes I have to say, you know, I'm a tax advisor. I slept at a Holiday Inn last night. I'm going to tell you what I know. And I want to refer them to an attorney because sometimes it falls on the attorney side. And I think it's important to have conversations with them as well. Someone like Harry Borders here in Louisville is fantastic to sit down and talk to about LLCs. So the very first thing I'm going to talk about is an LLC. And I'll tell you what I know, especially on the tax side. And then I'll tell you what I think it is on the legal side, but definitely a conversation you want to seek out an attorney and get more information about. Because in LLC, anybody can go online. And I think you pay $40 and you can create an LLC and you're up and running. You're ready to go. And I will see that a lot of times in forums. Bigger Pockets is one of them that I like to spend a lot of time on in the tax forums. You'll see some folks out there, some investors asking questions about LLCs. And I'll see a common answer is, well, just go online and create it. That's what I did. It's great. Which can be okay if you're comfortable with knowing how an LLC functions. So the first part I want to talk about is an LLC.
Can I jump in with one little thing?
Yeah, go ahead. Yes.
Okay. Thanks for letting investors know that you just do the tax side. So one thing that I learned, I had a huge expensive school of hard knocks, is way back when my kids were itty bitty, we wanted to have an estate plan that protected them. And so we went to a high dollar CPA tax attorney in a big tall building downtown where they have 3 floors in this law firm. And we come out with a stack of papers about 6 feet high, and we ended up having to do 17 additional tax returns. And oh man, it was about it. I didn't want that. So when you're talking about what Eric's getting ready to share with you and teach us about, his circle is tax strategies. Okay. And what I have found out is if you load up real super tight on tax strategies, that's going to affect your asset protection circle and it's going to affect your estate planning circle. Okay. And so just like the Olympic circle logo, these things overlap each other. And so in my case, my school of hard knocks was I loaded up tighter new rope on estate planning, but guess what? It killed me on tax strategies. Okay. And if you load up super tight on asset protection, it's going to hurt you in estate planning. It's going to hurt you in tax strategies. So that's why it's so important to have your real estate investor consultation with Eric and then understand that you've got to balance these three things out that fit your comfort zone of what you want to do. And so I just wanted to share that because that was a very painful and expensive school of hard knocks me and my wife went through. I just want to let you know. But you started off this episode by telling them that you do the tax side. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Now, what I will get a common question is, you know, well, I have this LLC, and you might see it again out on forums, the tax benefits of an LLC. So let's start off, you're a new investor, and you want to go out and purchase a property, and you want to start becoming a long-term renter, long-term hold renter, investor, I'm sorry, long-term investor. Or maybe you're doing flips, and you don't know exactly how to get your business started. Well, you could just start doing the business. You can be a sole proprietor. You don't have to have any free letters after your name. You don't have to be anything. You can just be a sole proprietor. And what an attorney might tell you is, especially in those long-term holds, you have liability insurance that will cover you potentially. And a lot of investors might just feel comfortable with the liability insurance that they purchase through just an insurance agent, and they don't worry about becoming an LLC. But then I have clients, they want to have an LLC for every property they purchase. Or I have clients that once they reach about $500,000 in properties, they create a new LLC. Or you might even consider, if you are flipping and you do want to do long-term holds, or maybe you even have short-term rentals, you might want to divide it and have an LLC that way for each of those different types of functions that you do in investing. So that's a start, but that's all on the legal side. On the tax side, here's what I have to say about LLCs. An LLC does nothing for you. In the eyes of the IRS, an LLC is not recognized. What they do recognize is, if you're a single member LLC, that's the way they treat you, as a disregarded entity. Your activity is reported on your personal return, straight on your personal return.
So I love that. No balance sheet. Yeah.
Well, did you hold that thought for the balance sheet? We can argue about that later on in another conversation, but nevertheless. So that's the single member LLC. But you may have gone out to a real estate investors association. We have the Kentucky Real Estate Investors Association here in Louisville. And maybe you met someone that you're like minds, and you feel comfortable enough that maybe you form a little partnership together, and now you're wanting to form an LLC. So what you've created a partnership, and in the eyes of the IRS, not looking at the LLC, they're just looking at the number of members. So single member, you're a disregarded entity. Multi-member, you're taxed as a partnership. So that means, going back to how it's reported, the single member activity goes straight to your individual return, which is the Form 1040. Or if you're a multi-member, you default to be taxed as a partnership, which is reported on a Form 1065. That's a business return, which you receive a K-1 from, kind of like a W-2, that is then passed through and reported on your personal return, the Form 1040. So I'll meet with clients sometimes, and when I'm asking them about their LLC, I'll ask if they're a partnership, and I'll ask if they have a business return, and it gets confusing. It's hard to understand sometimes, you know, what all you're filing, because you deal with the actual purchase of the homes and the landlord and all that part. You don't deal with the tax side of it, so you're just not familiar maybe with terms or understand all the time what papers you're signing to get the IRS away from you.
You don't know what you're signing. God, that sounds like closings.
I hate to say it that way, but you're with a trusted advisor, so you can always ask them questions if you don't know what you're signing. But even if I'm sitting in a closing, sometimes all those papers that's passed in front of me, I've trusted that the person putting that together, I have enough knowledge that I feel comfortable what I'm signing. So that's your LLC, and it's taxed as a partnership. And on the outside of the tax, it's a legal protection. It's limited liability corporation. So what that means is, and this is my tax explanation of it, an attorney can tell you better, is generally anything that happens within that LLC, something catastrophic, it stays within that LLC. If you have somebody sue you, you should be protected. And the worst that could happen would be you lose something within that LLC. But on the outside, you have other assets that should be protected. And I'll leave that part of the explanation again, a further explanation. I'll tell you to go talk to an attorney to get a better part of the legal side of it. But then you have issues sometimes, because Mike said overlapping. I always like to say you wear different hats. So you might be wearing your tax hat today. Tomorrow you're wearing your legal hat, but then you might have to be wearing a mortgage hat. And what does that mean? So I'll get a call from a client sometimes that says, hey, I'm refinancing my home, and the mortgage company wants me to refinance out of my LLC and put it into my personal name. And that's the only way they'll do it. So that's a tough conversation, because for tax purposes and for legal purposes, you really want to be keeping it in the LLC's name, but you really probably have to take it out just to get it refinanced if that puts you in a better financial position. And then there's the conversation of, you know, once you get the refinanced, you end up in, you probably will transfer it back into your LLC, but that's kind of a mortgage conversation. And, you know, there's some do's and don'ts on that you kind of want to feel comfortable. Go ahead, Mike.
I could add my experience on it as a result of my 3-year deep dive IRS audit that I got a green light on. So if you want to borrow the money, the rule of thumb is whoever has the cash is king. Okay. So if you've got a property that you own, you got it in the LLC, the owner of record is your LLC. Well, if you want to borrow that money, you know, they're going to say, well, they might say this, well, we're not going to loan it to your LLC. You got to sign for it personally. And then you got to be the owner. Okay. That's fine. So you get with your great real estate investor, attorney, or title company that works with you. They're part of your team. And so the first document when you have your closing is you're going to sign a quit claim deed from your LLC to you personally. Okay. And think of this chronological order. So now you own the property. Okay. Then you do all your refi paperwork, sign the promissory note, the mortgage, all this and that. And then you have your last document is a quit claim deed back to your LLC. Okay. And when they prepare that quit claim deed, your real estate attorney or title company, they're going to use the clause in your state law that says this is not a taxable event. Therefore, there's no transfer tax. And they cannot, it's not changing ownership. Okay. For even tax reasons, see? So it's not changing ownership. You just had to do this in order to get the refi. And that has worked out wonderful for me. Okay. Yeah. You hate putting it back in your personal name, but if you can get a 3% fix for 40-year loan and you want that money, well, then that's what you have to do. And so that's no problem. And I found out that, you know, if that's what they require, then go ahead and do that.
Good stuff there, Mike. That's good to know. So that's kind of what the LLC is. Hopefully that's a good explanation for you. The partnership explanation is next. And I've already explained, you know, being a multi-member creates the partnership for the LLC, or at least in the eyes of the IRS, it makes it a partnership. And when I mentioned that other return, the Form 1065, what's happening is you're filing another form, you're going to pay additional costs for the preparation of another tax return. And I think Mike and I have kind of talked about this in the past. Sometimes you might find an issue if you're a husband and wife team and you've created an LLC and you've created multi-members, both you and your wife own the LLC. And when I meet with prospects, I will sometimes find where that's the situation, but the activity they've had on their LLC is reported directly on their personal return being treated as like a single member LLC, which is an issue in states that aren't community property states. If you live in a state like Kentucky, we're not a community property state, and you are a husband and wife team, and your operating agreement and your articles of organization reflect that you're multi-members, the activity from your investment should be reported first on a partnership return, and then it flows through to your personal return.
That's IRS stuff.
Yes, absolutely. It's IRS. So then you kind of start wearing hats again, because if I'm talking to a client, that's the first thing I want to talk to them about is it really necessary for your other spouse to be a member of this partnership? Because being a member of that partnership means you're paying an additional fee and you're not getting a benefit out of it. It's just being pushed to another return only to come back to your personal return through the K-1. So that's a conversation I'll definitely have with clients. The other thing I want to point out, as far as a partnership is concerned, I mentioned operating agreement. There's a lot of situations, and this is kind of on the legal side, but I do want to point it out, where you met that person at the association that is of like mind, and you do decide you want to go out and purchase. Maybe you have the brains and they have the money, or you both have the heart and you're just going to go out and buy an investment property. I highly recommend having an operating agreement put in place, because sometimes, especially if you've gone online and created your LLC yourself, you may have bypassed the operating agreement. And what the operating agreement will do for you is if you and your partner have a disagreement on the way maybe money is handled, or potentially how distributions are taken out, how contributions need to be made to cover loans, the operating agreement will define things like that for you. You have kind of a Bible to go back to that defines how your company should act. So that might solve some disagreements. So always make sure, if you have a multi-member LLC, a partnership, to have an operating agreement put in place.
And always have an exit strategy.
Yes.
If things go south, then here's how we're going to resolve it.
Yep, absolutely. So that's all I got to say about partnerships, as Forrest would say. The next thing I want to move on to is S-corps. And these are just kind of the funky things that, if you don't deal with it enough, or maybe, you know, on the investing side, you just haven't heard of it enough. So hopefully what we've been discussing in these series is becoming very helpful to you to understand the tax side of it. So getting into S-corps, let's kind of keep the LLC motion going along, because again, I mentioned LLC single member disregarded entity, LLC multi-member partnership. But there's a possibility either of those situations, you might not want to be taxed as a disregarded entity, or you might not want to be taxed as a partnership. You might want to be taxed as an S corporation. And the reason you would do that is there's potential tax savings being taxed as an S corporation. The very first thing I want to say is, if you make an election to be taxed as an S corporation, you take on additional burdens. Additional burdens is you have to keep that balance sheet that Mike doesn't like. You have to file payroll returns because you're going to have to start paying yourself a reasonable wage. You're going to have to keep better books, and you're going to have another business return to file. Those are additional burdens. They're additional costs. And to make an election to be taxed as an S corp, we'll get into it in a minute, you want to make a certain amount of net income consistently for it to make sense. But let's talk about why you don't want to be taxed as an S corp. The number one reason, in my mind, and it's a situation I came across with a client, it's a new client that I had. He went out and had his former tax advisor. This client has two different LLCs, and they were originally taxed as partnerships, but the tax advisor talked him into making an election to be taxed as an S corporation because it was going to save him money. This investor has rental properties. So the problem with that is, being taxed as an S corporation, as I said, you had to pay yourself a reasonable wage. Reasonable wage is subject to employment taxes. Rental activity is not subject to employment or self-employment taxes. Defaulting and electing to be taxed as an S corporation, you're creating more tax for yourself. That's one problem with making that election with rental properties. Another issue is, once you get it in there, you're done. I would say I probably wouldn't. It's easy to make an election. It's hard to get out of it. So once you're there, if that's happened to you, or maybe back in the 70s and 80s, maybe even 90s, there were more S corps anyway. So you had rental properties and S corps. But nowadays, you're going to have the LLCs, and that's what you're shooting for. But if you have property in a LLC taxed as an S corp, watch taking it out. And I'll give you an example of this. This isn't rental property, but I had a client at one of my old firms who was a developer, and he had maybe, let's just say he put about $500,000 in raw land, and it was in an LLC, and it was taxed as an S corporation. Somewhere down the road, he kept that land, and there was another company that wanted to buy him out. Because he had other activity going on, but he had this land. We're just focusing on that. So the other company was going to buy him out. He took that property and distributed it out to himself. And he put it in a new LLC. Everything was perfect. Everything was great on the legal side. There was no issues. But the one issue that he did have was, on the tax side, he created a taxable event. When you distribute property like that out of an S corp, it triggers a taxable event as if you sold it. So that $500,000 of property he had when he bought it is now $1,000,000. When he distributed that out of the company, it's as if he sold it for $1,000,000, and he was subject to a $500,000 gain. That's the second reason why you never want to have rental properties in an S corporation.
Let me run this by you, quick review. So this investor, less than best advice, ended up with S corp for long-term hold properties.
Yep.
Okay. So then he's got somebody that wants to buy one of his pieces of dirt that he owns that he bought for $500,000. So somebody else wants to buy it for $1 million. Is that your store? Is this the situation here?
Yep.
Okay. So he wants to avoid paying taxes in the S corp. So he wants to sell this probably for the same price he bought it for to a single member LLC might have, or his name individually, so that the seller to the $1 million buyer is him personally on his 1040 instead of running it through the S corp. That was his objective.
He's taking his land, he's taking his ball and going home. But all the other things going on, he's selling that to the purchaser, but he's keeping his land. It's two different. It's actually two different situations. I think you missed that. One situation I gave you an example was he just went out and bought rental properties and now it's in an S corp. So that's one example. The second example is a developer who had other activity going on, also had land that he hadn't touched yet. He hadn't developed it yet. So when the company came in to purchase his company, he wanted to take
his company. You're saying his company wants to buy it?
No. So we'll just say example one is client A. Example two is client B. And client B is going to sell to buyer D.
Okay.
Buyer D is going to buy everything in that company except the land, because client B is taking that land and distributing it out to himself.
So the buyer D is buying everything except the dirt.
Exactly. It's gone before they even know it's there. He takes it out because he knows he's going to sell. He takes that land out. He's keeping it because he's going to go create his own other something else and do something on his own. But the value of the rest of his company, buyer D, they're buying that, the rest of his company, the rest of the activity.
Okay, I got that.
So because he did that, he took that land out, he just distributed it. Just like you take cash out of the bank, you write it to your personal name out of your LLC. That's what he did. He just took the land out and he transferred it into his name. Doing that created a taxable event.
And so would that be, since he paid $500,000 for it, would that be that it's equivalent to him selling it to himself for $500,000?
No, it's equivalent to what the fair market value is. So he sold it at $1 million. He had a $500,000 gain out of it just because he distributed it.
Even though he didn't receive $1 million.
Exactly.
Holy cow.
Let me make it worse for you. Let me tell you the even worse.
It's worser. It's worser. That's a that's a word now. Did you know that? It's worser. In college dictionary. Worser. Now, they don't have worsest in there yet. I'm trying.
So that's the gain side, right? So now we're kind of, you know, I've mentioned maybe the market might be turning. And maybe, like, let's not get back to 2008 in that period. But remember, property back then depreciated, right?
Yeah.
They lost their value. So let's say he bought it at $500,000. But today, when he distributed it, it's worth $400,000. So he's got an unrealized $100,000 loss, right?
Yeah.
He distributes it. It comes out at either fair market value or cost. So it comes out at $500,000. He's lost. He is not going to be able to take advantage of the $100,000 loss. He loses it.
Wow.
So that's really getting into the weeds, but that's a good reason that you don't want to have rental property in an S corporation. But let's get over to talking about flippers. We can throw realtors in here for sure. Although there's a situation, there's a court case, a recent court case that might make this argument a little tougher, but we're going to ignore that one for today, and we're going to include realtors in this conversation. And here's the conversation. You're an LLC, you flip properties, or you're a realtor, and you're a single member LLC. All your activity is reported on the Schedule C of your personal return. And I used this example in one of our other conversations earlier. When you have activity at the end of the year, let's say your net income is $100,000, you're going to be subject to an ordinary income tax of whatever that bracket, whatever that money falls in, whatever tax bracket it falls in. So let's say it all falls into 22% tax bracket. In addition to that, you're going to be subject to self-employment tax, 15.3%. So close to 40% of that $100,000 is going to be a federal tax you're paying. If you're an LLC, single member, disregarded entity, all reported on the Schedule C of your personal return. But as I was mentioned earlier, you can make an election to be taxed as an S corporation. There's additional burdens that we'll talk about more here in a second. But let's say you decide to make that election. Now, instead of a single member disregarded LLC, you're an LLC taxed as an S corporation. You're going to be filing an additional business 1120S tax return. And what's going to be required of you is this. You're going to have to start paying yourself a reasonable wage. There's different methods of coming up with that wage. But for now, for argument's sake, let's just say you decide $20,000 is the wage you're going to pay yourself. Of the $100,000, $20,000 is going to be a wage. So that wage is going to be subject to employment taxes and ordinary income tax. So 40% of that $20,000, if we use the same example as being taxed on the Schedule C, 40% of that $20,000 is what you're going to pay on that income, right? The other $80,000 is not being paid as a wage. It's subject to ordinary income tax only. You're only going to pay 22% on that $80,000. The other 15.3% you're not paying, what's 15.3% times $80,000? It's like $9,000. You're saving, technically, $9,000 of taxes by making an election to be taxed as an S corporation. But you need to subtract your additional burdens because there's going to be a tax prep fee, which could be ranged like $1,200 potentially. You're going to be paying a payroll service fee because you have to file payroll returns and a W-2 every year. So you have to subtract that out of the $9,000. But at the end of the day, it makes sense for you to be taxed as an S corporation because it's a good tax saving possibility. Now, there was legislation in Congress last year that discussed a way to make that $80,000 potentially more taxable, but it fell out of the legislation when all the final laws were passed at the end of last year and the final tax acts, which I can't even remember the names of them now. But just keep in mind, this is a, you could call it a tax loophole. It's a legal loophole. But it's something that Congress has an eye on in the future. But as of right now, it's definitely a good planning tool to consider being taxed as an S corporation. The only other thing I'll say about this is, going back to that $100,000, you could get into next year. How are flippers doing right now? If, you know, I'm talking to clients right now that have consistently flipped over the last couple of years. Some of them are beginning to change their strategy and look at more longer term holds, because the margins on their sales aren't as good on the flips, so their income's going to go down. If you're not consistently making a certain number, and I always say somewhere around 60,000 is when it begins to be a good number to consider making an S election, but you want to consistently make above 60,000 every year, because if you don't make 60,000 every year, you're not taking advantage. Like, the benefit of being taxed as an S corporation isn't worth the time to do it. So that's all I got to say about being taxed as an S corporation. Hopefully I've given a good explanation of the different types of tax situations with the different types of entities you may have.
Yeah, I know this one's going a little bit longer than what we planned for, Eric, but bottom line is S corp is not good for rental properties, for buy and hold.
Yes.
That's okay. So if anybody tries to tell you put your rental properties in S corp, taboo, don't do that. Now, if you've got another business, you're doing your flips, your deals, and where you do stuff to earn money to get paid, then an S corp might be appropriate. Okay. And only Eric can help you, hold your hand, guide you through that process. Now, there's one other entity, and I know you don't have it on here, but for the advanced investors, okay, I'm going to give you my version and see if you bless it. Okay. So once upon a time, way back in the previous millennium, I was making too much money between my, not so much my police job, my W-2, but the real estate I was doing. And it was kicking me up into a higher tax bracket before my depreciation grew so much it wiped everything out. So my CPA at the time says, hey, Mike, you need to have another entity put some of this stuff over here because you can make up to $50,000 and pay only 15%. Now, I don't know what that rate is today. So that's what I did. And so what I created was a C-Corp. Okay. And this guy was a genius. And so the C-Corp doesn't have passive income. It has earned income, correct?
Yep.
Okay. So I lose the passive income benefit. But here's what I did with my C-Corp. The C-Corp is going to be used for flips. Okay. So a buy, fix, up, and sell, say. Okay. My C-Corp is also my property management company that the LLC that owns my rental properties pays a management fee to the C-Corp. Now, it's not recommended to do this with one or two properties. What's the magic number? I don't know. Figure that out with Eric. Okay. But here's the benefits that I get from that. Now, remember, I went through that 3-year audit with the IRS and came out with a green light. Okay. So the C-Corp, just a simple version, investor to investor, you can basically take a lot of your cost of living expenses and turn them into business expenses. Okay. And so I was able to do that. But here's the most powerful thing I think a C-Corp offers today's investor. You get to choose your fiscal year end date. And if you don't understand that, that's okay. I didn't understand it, but my CPA that recommended me to do this C-Corp, and I set it up way back when, I think it was before LLCs existed in Kentucky. Okay. And so Vista Properties Inc. is my C-Corp. I got to choose fiscal year, and he recommended do June 30th. Now, what's a benefit for a June 30th fiscal year end date? That's when I got to file my taxes for that entity. Instead of ending on 12/31 as D-Day, like everybody else, the C-Corp has D-Day of June 30th. Now, here's a benefit using my investor book system that's been blessed by the IRS, okay? And if I do my monthly reports properly, I can see what's trending. Am I making too much money here? Am I not making enough money here? And I get a 6-month window to play and scoot stuff around. Now, that's probably not the right words to say in front of Eric, but it's wonderful. Now, I can say this, C-Corps put you in a whole different ball game, and it's not for everybody. And because it's taking passive income, turn it into earned income, which Eric has told you, you don't want to do that because now you got to pay a higher tax bracket. But the C Corp, is it still 50,000, 15%?
Well, what it is, and I don't disagree with what you're saying for the most part. On a higher level, a higher net worth individual, this might make better sense with multiple amounts of assets. But you got double taxation going on with it. So the tax on the income is 21% inside the C Corp. And then what you're talking about,
15% anymore.
Well, no, what you're talking about is taking money out probably, and that's where you're double taxed. You're paying a dividend of 15%.
Well, the C-Corp files a tax return, okay, and it's going to show a profit. I want that profit to stay as low as possible.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, and so if I can hold that at $10,000 or $15,000 or something like that, that's good, okay? But I still have to pay myself and my bride paychecks, payroll.
W-2, so, yeah, that's another way you're going to get. So if you're paying like that's, you would have a W-2 wage, which, you know, again, you're passing it down to the individual tax brackets, and you have money that you might take out of it coming out as a distribution, a dividend. So you would pay a fee on that. But the income inside, if you have a remaining net income, which if you're planning, that's the part where it's good to be taxed on your year end is 630. Because you can tinker with what your income looks like.
I like tinker.
And, you know, legally tinker. And you want to get that amount as low as possible because you're going to be taxed at 21%. So that's where you're getting double taxed. But it's still...
I think my hourly wage is $10 an hour. Mm-hmm. Okay. But here's the benefit. Let's go back to when we first got started in this series. We talked about depreciation. Okay. So if you have enough depreciation, that's going to wipe out your taxable income.
Yes, it could, definitely.
Yeah. So it's not, I mean, if you're just getting started, C-Corp's the last thing you need to think about. Okay. But as you become more successful and as depreciation wipes out your income, C-Corp can be beneficial, but it's for only certain, you've got to, let's say, qualify for it. Okay. And there's nothing written in stone that says, when you get here, it's the best time to do a C-Corp. It's going to be unique to your situation. get with Eric with your free real estate investor consultation. He'll hold your hand through that and he will explain the pros and cons unique to you. But that's awesome. So we're going to wrap this one up. Is that okay?
Yep.
You got anything to add? Okay.
I think we're good.
Okay. So we're going to wrap this session up here, guys. And that was a fantastic session with Eric. And because you invested your time, energy, and effort taking a whole bunch of notes here and stuff, Eric's offered you a free real estate investor tax consultation. So you can go to LinkedIn.com/Eric Shadowins. Okay. If you're familiar with LinkedIn, I'm on it, but I don't know what it does. Okay. Or you can email him at eshadowins@dmlo.com or just give him a call 502-326-2319. And you'll get your free real estate investor consultation. I tell you what, I've had several with him and it's been eye-opening. Okay. Because there's been more tax law updates involving investment property and real estate investors. If you want to get your IRS publication on rental property, including short-term rentals, that's IRS publication 527. You can get that absolutely free. Go to mikebutler.com/527 to get that right now. And you'll get that IRS publication there for real estate. So I did the free investor. Now, last thing, okay? I'm looking at my cheat sheet. I got to view my notes here. Myself and Eric need your help. And what we need you to do is to click the follow button or the subscribe button. Anywhere you can add a comment, you can share this with other folks, whatever it is in that social media environment, we need your help. So I'd appreciate if you do that. That's how you can reward me and Eric for doing this for you and for your fellow investors. And I got a free investor training webinar every Tuesday at 12 noon. Absolutely free. It's called the Power Lunch. Go to mikebutler.com. You can sign up for that. Adios. We'll see you on the next episode. And our next episode is going to be about things to do. So we're going to have tax due updates, choosing the tax advisor, starting to act like a business. And that's what you're going to have in the next episode. See you then. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Mike.
Glad you joined us for another episode of 5-Hour Real Estate Week. The best thing you can do now is put this information to action. To help you get started, Mike created a free resource for you called How to Buy 50 Houses a Year, Even with Your Job. Download it now by going to mikebutler.com/50houses. And we'll see you on the next episode.